In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Monday, August 9th, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In hour number two of the program today, we're going to focus on cloud computing. Dr. Darrell West of the Brookings Institution hosting an event on cloud computing in the public sector about 2 weeks ago. We'll hear some highlights of that event, and then we'll talk to Dr. West about his report about cloud computing in the second hour of the program today. In hour number one, my latest in-depth conversation, which is titled Measuring Agency Performance, Setting the Metrics. And I have three friends and three experts on that subject in studio today. Happy to welcome John Desenberg first. John is Policy Director for the Performance Management and Human Capital Management Divisions at the Performance Institute, and some of the agencies John has worked with on performance issues include the Department of Health and Human Services, DOD, the Army and Navy, the Forest Service, NASA, and many more. John Kaminsky is Senior Fellow with the IBM Center for the Business of Government and an Associate Partner with IBM's Global Business Services. Before joining IBM, spent 8 years as Deputy Director of Vice President Gore's National Partnership for Reinventing Government. Before that, he spent some time at the GAO, where he was involved with the development and passage of the Government Performance and Results Act. Thank you for being here today,
Thank
John.
You.
Robert Shea, Principal at Grant Thornton, was Associate Director at the Office of Management and Budgets Administration and Government Performance. He managed OMB's internal affairs and led the President's Performance Improvement Initiative, an integral component of the President's Management Agenda, PMA. Thank you, Robert, for being here as well. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So we have three experts on performance here, and each of you, the reason I wanted you to all be here today is each of you has told me over the past 6 months or so separately that if we don't set the metrics right at the beginning, if we don't set the parameters for measuring whatever performance we want to measure correctly, whatever we get on the back end will be of no use to us or to OMB ultimately, who is going to be leading these performance initiatives. We talked beforehand that we are closing in now on 2 years since the administration has taken over, and we're still waiting for some of the elements of their performance initiative to flesh out. In the meantime, there are agencies who are very interested in maintaining the performance levels that they've achieved and or improving them. And so I'm hoping that what we can do today is provide some ideas for people who are saying, even though we're not quite sure where we're going to be headed performance-wise, we're going to grab the bull by the horns and make sure that we are improving the performance that we're providing to taxpayers today. John Desenberg, I'm going to start with you. We're going to start at the very, 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 very beginning, before the first step even. What are your thoughts about what we should be looking at as I'm sitting at my desk at my agency trying to figure out how I even tackle this issue of performance management?
Yeah, Francis, and thanks so much for having me here. You know, when I talked to you and when I came in today, one quote went through my mind, and it's a quote I recently heard. You know, I teach a class on strategic planning and performance management for federal executives, and recently I had a student say to me, my boss really believes in performance management and measurement. He doesn't believe in planning or strategic planning at all. And I said to myself, you know, that is a very telling quote, and not just for you, not just for your agency, but for many, many people around the government. And this is what I'm talking about, which is measuring without planning is like keeping score, but we don't care what game we're playing. Mm-hmm. It just makes absolutely no sense. But in many ways, the trend and kind of the mania for performance measures and metrics and scorecards and dashboards, it's like we're going to build a big scoreboard and rack up points, but, you know, it doesn't matter if it's football or baseball. Mm-hmm. Let's just get that scoreboard
as long
up
as
there
there's
and
numbers.
Start racking some numbers. And this is what, unfortunately, is tending to happen, and I'd be interested in hearing the other guests comment on this, because people want the measures, and then you'll hear people say, we need a lot of measures, and by the way, they need to be all at 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is just, it doesn't even pass the common sense test, because it makes absolutely no sense. What are you measuring and why, and where do you want to be what does success look like for your organization? And then eventually let's get to measures, and then a little later let's start target setting. Instead, it's completely turned around and backwards, where we set a target at 100%, let's find a measure that can be 100%, and then whatever it's telling us, and that's not so important.
Mm-hmm.
So this is becoming very frustrating, because on one hand, I know all of us here today are very happy to see attention given to performance measures. On the other hand, it's very disturbing because it is very, what I would call, surface-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about just putting something up there and very little about where it's taking you or what it means.
John Kaminsky, I think John's points are very well articulated, especially when it comes to the frustration level that's out there amongst people who are trying to move their organizations forward and use a plan to get it done.
Yes, and what John said is absolutely true. I've seen this in my conversations with federal managers as well. They want a dashboard. They want measures. And then when you ask them, what's your strategic plan? They say, well, we don't have time for that. So, well, where do you want to be going? Well, it's statutory.
Yeah.
You know, so you get this vague sense of where they want to be going, but they really want a dashboard with numbers on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality of this is that the Government Performance Results Act and these other initiatives, like the Program Assessment Review Tool, it creates a supply of information if you put together a thoughtful dashboard with a strategic plan. But even when you have a supply and you have a performance report at the end of the year, that doesn't matter. What really matters is the ability to create a conversation, a data-driven conversation, hopefully, mm-hmm. around how do you improve, and what do the numbers tell you? The data oftentimes will tell you what's going on, but won't tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to sort of dig into what is causing this trend in pandemic tracking or something like that. You have to really tie it back to the mission, and how do you use this to do something? It's not so much creating the measures, but using them that becomes the real challenge.
Is the data, Robert, the first thing that you want to determine what data it is that you want to get? What's the very first step?
You don't want to measure only those things for which you have data.
Mm-hmm.
You and I find the conversation here includes vocabulary that probably still is not widely understood by a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
and it bears repeating.
Okay.
Federal government has a long tradition of great success. We, you know, fought and won World War II. We put a man on the moon. We've cured countless diseases. The federal government has a really proud foundation of high performance on which to build. But we can't forget that what we're about is outcomes. You can't achieve much if you don't know what it is you're supposed to be achieving. In the private sector, that's pretty easy. We've got a bottom line. In
mm-hmm.
the public sector, much more difficult. We're about outcomes, outcomes that are important to the American people. And often we don't have a source of data to tell us whether or not we're achieving that outcome. And it's much easier to count the widgets, the activities you're performing on a day-to-day basis, much harder to figure out critically, is what we're doing today contributing in a measurable way to the outcomes that we ultimately want to achieve on behalf of the American people? So the first step is, what is the outcome we're trying to achieve? What is the totality of activities that we're currently performing to achieve those outcomes?
Mm-hmm.
And how well are they doing? What do we need to do to change?
Do we overthink some of these potential outcomes? Do we try to make them a lot more complicated than they need to be? I mean, one potential outcome, as you talked about, could be we want to get a man on the moon by 1969. That's an outcome. Do we try to make them a lot, and that's not a complicated outcome, that's pretty self-evident. Do we make them too hard for ourselves?
There are some, for example, if you want to improve the quality of life. One of the ways of improving the quality of life is reducing the instances of obesity, because that has a lot of other things. And if you have an outcome of reducing obesity, then it has a lot of different options. And the question is what are the different strategies?
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's food, some of it's exercise, some of it is environmental. There's a lot of different factors, and different agencies play in this. There is no institutional mechanism in our government to look at outcomes that reach across agency boundaries. In the case of going to the moon, that's NASA.
Yeah.
That's pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
That's a project, really.
Mm-hmm.
But doing something that it addresses people's day-to-day behavior is far more complex. But it's been done. If you look at the reducing the amount of smoking, instances of heart attacks and stuff. So there are instances in public health arena of dealing with large-scale changes that are measurable and that have consequences for individual people.
Well, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts, each of you, when we come back from the break about what that, how that should work, whether there should be an organization maybe within OMB, maybe standing on its own or whatever, that can work on those cross-agency things that you're talking about, John. We'll do that when we come back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My in-depth conversation today called Measuring Agency Performance, Setting the Metrics, with John Desenberg, John Kaminsky, and Robert Shea. We'll continue in a moment.
There is a watchmaking standard that is revered around the world. That standard comes from Rolex. From clasp to bracelet to its unique watertight oyster case, a Rolex holds its value because it was intended to. Crafted from just three precious metals, platinum, steel, and gold, each defies the ordinary. Its steel, 904L, virtually indestructible and corrosion resistant, is incomparable. Its patented Everrose Gold, created in an exclusive foundry, will remain beautiful for life. Inside, a genuine Rolex movement is a product of superiority and remarkable testing. It is unrivaled. At Rolex, flawless standards create more than a watch. They create a value that was meant to endure. For a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Hey, Caps fans, are you ready for the total Caps experience? The Capitals Convention returns on Saturday, October 2nd at the Washington Convention Center in downtown D.C. Spend a full day immersed in Capitals hockey with players, coaches, management, and alumni. Get players' autographs and learn more about their lives both on and off the ice. And be the first to see the 2011 Winter Classic uniforms. Tickets are $45 for adults and $25 for kids. Last year's convention sold out with over 5,000 guests, so get your tickets now at WashingtonCaps.com.
Ugh, would you look at this bill?
Tired of paying way too much to your alarm company and not getting real security service? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems and pay just $18.95 a month, and there's no cost to switch. Why Ackerman? Ackerman has more than 40 years of industry-leading experience and was recently named Dealer of the Year out of over 30,000 companies. Ackerman has its own UL and CSAA 5 Diamond Certified Monitoring Center. Put simply, with Ackerman Security Systems, you get the most qualified professionals in the industry monitoring your home for just $18.95 a month. Over 180,000 people enjoy peace of mind with Ackerman. So whether you want a new system or want to switch to reliable monitoring for just $18.95 a month, call 888-999-1070, 888-999-1070, or visit AckermanSecurity.com. Federal employees, call today and get 4 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, talking about measuring agency performance, setting the metrics at the very beginning with John Desenberg, John Kaminsky, and Robert Shea. And John Kaminsky, before the break, you were talking about the fact that there isn't one central place that oversees outcomes that are impacted by multiple agencies or by the performance of multiple agencies. You think there should be? And if so, where should that be?
That's a good question. That hasn't been resolved institutionally. The Obama administration has probably inadvertently backed into it and run into a political buzzsaw by creating what have been called czars, the auto czar, the environmental czar, the health czar. But in reality, those are people that sort of are the people that bring together the solutions that are needed to be able to address a large-scale issue.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, where do you put that kind of institutional thing? Is it in the White House? Is it in OMB? And in Congress, you need to have something parallel on that side, and there is no institutional mechanism If you look at climate change, one of the federal agencies is EPA, and there's a range of federal agencies. But if you go to the Congress, for EPA alone, there's more than 70 committees and subcommittees that have jurisdiction. So mm-hmm. this notion of trying to have an integrated whole on the executive branch and the legislative branch side, right now, institutionally, we haven't sorted that out.
Robert, you think there should be one place for...
Well, there is. It's the Office of Management and Budget. I mean, there's someone responsible for every agency and program of the government in that agency, and they are a natural place to improve coordination. Hmm. Unfortunately, it mirrors the stovepipe organization of the federal government. And so if you loosened that structure, it might better facilitate the kind of coordination of cross-cutting activities that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Chief Performance, the Performance Improvement Officers Council, is actually starting to put together these kinds of collaborations across agencies in certain areas, crime, for instance, evaluation. I mean, I tend to not think we ought to establish a new bureaucracy mm-hmm. to improve the current bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
We ought to try and use the existing ones to fix where we think things are broken. It'll never be perfect. And to think that some new organization will fix things overnight is Pollyannish.
John Desenberg?
You know, one of the things that we go down the rabbit hole here is the thought that either a new bureaucracy or technology, which I've seen more and more, people think technology can solve these questions with the scorecards and the dashboards and this dashboard and that dashboard, when in fact, most performance issues that we see in government are actually cultural, not technological, not really even data-driven. And what I'm talking about is this tension that exists around outcomes, which is between what I have complete control over as a federal executive mm-hmm. and what I may just have a little bit of influence over as a federal executive or federal organization. And we know that with outcome measures, you don't have complete control over the results. You don't have 100% control. You're going to have to be comfortable culturally with the fact that you have some influence over this measure, but you're only going to have some influence. You're going to have to share that influence with state governments, local governments, mm-hmm. the public, non-governmental organizations. So this I think it's a deep-set anxiety in executives in the federal government about these kinds of measures, because you are saying to yourself, I don't have complete control over this, but I'm going to measure it anyway. I'm going to hold myself accountable for this anyway. And it's a very scary place for many executives, especially because in the senior executive service, you're own personal performance appraisal is linked to these measures in yeah. some way. And it creates a lot of tension. And we really see more and more there's a serious cultural issue, a behavioral issue around this concept.
I couldn't agree more that this is a big issue. I don't know from whence it comes, because there are very few professions where you're judged based on things over which you have total control.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have control over who buys my services, but I try to adopt strategies that make it more likely that they will.
Mm-hmm.
There's no activity in the federal government where we have total control. We're trying to change big things. We're trying to change cities, states, the world. We're trying to cure disease. We don't have control over disease.
Mm-hmm.
But we've done it. And I think a big challenge, one we must overcome, is that you need to be identifying how well we're doing over things we don't have total control. It's not sufficient to simply measure those things over which we have total control.
Well, John Desenberg is not the first person that's talked about the buy-in issue, and Robert, you and I have talked about this. I don't remember if it was on or off the air, but we've talked about that in the past. So let's focus on that a little bit when we come back from the break about the experience that you all have had in getting people at the agencies to at least agree on what the outcomes are that you're going to be judging them on. My guest for my in-depth conversation on measuring agency performance, setting the metrics, are Robert Shea, John Kamensky, and John Desenberg. We'll continue our conversation in a few minutes on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And a reminder, in hour number two, cloud computing at your agency with Dr. Darrell West of the Brookings Institution, coming up on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hi. I'm Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are moderately higher in anticipation of the Federal Reserve's policy meeting tomorrow. Some analysts think the Fed will signal it's prepared to renew its stimulus efforts to prop up the sagging economy. The Dow's up 34 points, the Nasdaq higher by 11. The Dow is being weighed down by Hewlett-Packard. Shares are falling after Chief Executive Mike Hurd stepped down from his post after an investigation into his relationship with a contractor. McDonald's shares hit an all-time high on a stronger-than-expected 7% increase in global same-store sales. And this time, it's Honda's turn. The Japanese automaker is recalling its popular Accord and Civic cars because of a defective ignition switch. It could allow the key to be removed when the shift lever isn't in park. This could cause the vehicle to roll away and lead to a crash. Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio.
Ford and Lincoln Mercury Service presents Mike Rowe with some important information about the big tire sale.
Well, that about sums it up, really. It's a tire sale, and it's big.
I'll say, when you buy four Goodyear, Continental, Hankook, Yokohama, or Pirelli tires, you get a $100 cash rebate. $100! You forgot to mention that, Mike.
Well, that's why you're here.
Thank you.
It's the big tire sale at your Ford and Lincoln Mercury dealers.
See participating dealership or visit genuineservice.com for mail-in rebate and details through 83110.
Like a lot of people, Marlo Scott wanted to do things differently, so she created her own business and made ink from Jace her business card.
I was doing the corporate grind until I opened my cupcake wine and beer bar, Sweet Revenge. I love ink. I get rewards on every purchase. It has twice the acceptance worldwide as American Express, and free ink cards if I need them for my employees.
Make your mark with ink. Go to jace.com/ink. Jace what matters.
Acceptance rates based on global, not domestic data. Restrictions apply. Ink cards issued by Chase Bank USA and subject to credit approval.
What will happen to your hard-earned wealth after you die? How do you protect your assets for your family? Will your heirs squander it away? Will creditors and predators try to take it away from your loved ones? At Zelle Law, our goal is to give you peace of mind in planning for your retirement and beyond by helping you construct the best life and estate plans customized to your needs. Find out what you need to know on Blueprint for Wealth. Join me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. right here on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
When it comes to cybersecurity, the Navy Department's ships and ashore facilities are one big network. Here's Chris Kelsall, chief of the cyber IT workforce.
We look at it as a combined deployed and shore infrastructure. So the folks need to be able to move from one to the other, maintain and improve on their skills, depending on where they are and the things that they're doing.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Which agency has the best gym? Federal News Radio is now accepting your nominations as part of our Best of the Federal Government series. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for Best Of. Be sure to check back throughout the summer. We'll have other fun categories for you to vote on, like which agency has the best overall location, which has the best parking or transportation options, who's the best dressed fed you know. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for Best Of.
Unsafe, safe smokes. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus with HHS HealthBeat. We know tobacco and nicotine are bad for you. They can give you cancer, among other things. But what about cigarettes made with lettuce, which don't have tobacco and nicotine? Do they have less risk? Well, a study that looked at these tobacco-free cigarettes found evidence that the smoke from them damaged DNA in ways that could be expected to lead to cancer. At New York Medical College, Professor Zbigniew Darzenkevich.
Smoke from cigarettes that do not contain tobacco nicotine is inducing DNA damage in cells to even greater extent than smoke from standard cigarettes.
His advice is to avoid smoke from cigarettes of any type and from other sources. The study in the journal Cell Cycle was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus.
Plan now to attend the Association of Federal Information Resources Management's annual series of education events at their discounted government membership rates. For a full year subscription, including a firm membership, you'll support a firm's scholarships while learning about government information technology challenges each month from September to June. You can also bring your talent to many of a firm's committees in support of their nonprofit goals. Sign up today at affirm.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And this is one of those conversations that I wish we could record what the conversation during the breaks and make that available somehow, because hearing the three of you talk about these issues is just fascinating stuff. John Kaminsky, the IBM Center for the Business of Government, Robert Shea of Grant Thornton, and John Desenberger, the Performance Institute, my guests in studio for my in-depth conversation called Measuring Agency Performance, Setting the Metrics. Before the break, we were talking about getting buy-in, and Robert, you and I have talked about how you approached agency people when you were at OMB. John, you and I have talked a little bit about it when you were in the Clinton administration doing a similar kind of thing. Start with you, I guess. When the Clinton administration took over for President Bush, what kind of transition was made performance-wise, and what did you have to get agency people on board with, and then talk a little bit about how you did it?
Well, in the transition from the first Bush presidency to Clinton, there was a lot of chaos. And at that point, there was not a Government Performance and Results Act. And I was involved in the National Performance Review, which was a review of agencies in the first 6 months with recommendations for how to restructure or rethink government processes. And a lot of that was trying to come up with a vision, a broad vision. And in the case of the Reinventing Government initiative, it was how do you make government work better and cost less and put customers first and cut red tape. So there were these broad ideas and principles, but we tried to give employees the tools to go out and do them themselves. So we were rewarding or recognizing employees through awards and through creating flexibilities called reinvention labs to go out and try to put these principles to work in their workplace. So this wasn't the same as the reaching outcomes for the agency or something broad and noble. It was fairly prosaic and on the front line.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little different than what happened in the future, and that was because at the time, there were no metrics, there were no strategic plans, there were no performance plans in place, and that evolved over the course of that administration.
Mm-hmm.
The idea there was try to engage the employees in helping to define and articulate things so that they're actionable, that and the employees feel like they can actually do it and succeed.
Mm-hmm. What do you think was the most critical thing that you did to get that feeling in people's minds that they were going to be able to get engaged in this and participate, and it was going to be good for them?
Yeah, I think, the whole notion of the use of waiver authority to allow employees or managers on the front lines to waive agency rules, not laws or regulations, but agency rules to be able to better serve their customers. So the focus there was more on improving customer satisfaction at the frontline level as opposed to, you know, solving poverty or improving healthcare. It was much more operational.
And where do you think performance was in government when you handed things off to the Bush 43 team?
The infrastructure of the supply of performance information, strategic plans, performance reports, performance measurement systems were handed off, but the supply did not necessarily create a demand for the use of the information. So our concern was that it looked like a huge paperwork exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't have a way of encouraging either the legislature or the managers and executive agencies to use the information, that it might be a failure.
Mm-hmm. And Robert, what did you find when you came in and saw the results of John's work when you started at OMB?
I was very proud to be associated with that work of John's. And then I think what we did was we built on that foundation by designing systems that were more integrated with the budget process. They were designed to say, when this program asks for more money, what performance expectations should we have for it? And we should judge those that funding request relative to other like programs. We didn't make that connection quite as elegantly or as purely as we would have hoped, but we made some progress. The most important thing we accomplished was a systematic way of judging the outcomes programs were achieving over time.
Mm-hmm.
I think we risk losing that now that the focus has moved from programs to high priority performance goals, more short term, less outcome oriented. Now the administration suggests they're going to retain the program level measures and report that on their new website, usaperforms.gov, full shout out. That remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. What about your efforts that you and I have talked about before to get the high-level people at the agencies to buy into what you wanted to do? That's a major change, saying, you know what, if you can't show us results, you may not get money.
Right. And you separate from the very highest-level politicals. They had a publicly released scorecard that judged their performance, to which they paid a lot of attention, and therefore it produced a lot of their energy and efforts. At the senior career level, we were able to enact legislation that said you need to say how what you're doing contributes to the outcomes that are important to the agency, and we'll tie a little bit of your performance, your pay increase to that performance. And that system evolves, so you're getting more and more buy-in to that.
John Desenberg, what are the best practices that you see in your work, not just at the federal level? Maybe tell us something that you're seeing in state and local government or whatever to get the people with a vested interest involved to make sure that they are willing to go along, not fighting this all the way.
Well, you know, and I definitely talk about that. I just had to comment on John and Robert's work because I've seen the results of that work in agencies around government, and it's a little like going up into someone's attic where they bought a lot of good stuff, and then they never really were able to clear it all out. So now we have the part, which people really liked, some people. They're not quite sure if it's still here completely or if it's gone. They've seen OMB memos that kind of hinted that it was going away, but never quite clearly said it was gone. High-priority performance goals, which we're hearing a lot about. If you go into a room and ask people, and I do this quite a bit, do you know what your high-priority performance goal is? Very few people raise their hand, and then there's a confusion around why are we measuring short-term 1 year to 18-month type goals when we've been talking long-term outcomes for the last 10 years. You know, there's confusion there. So we're left with a lot of interesting ideas, and now the question is, where do we go with all this stuff? How do we kind of cull it back and figure it out? What we've seen, unfortunately, and getting to best practices, a worst practice, a bad practice, is just a plethora of measures.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting measures from their CFO's office, and they're getting measures from new offices like these program evaluation offices, which, by the way, don't really do that much real program evaluation. And then they're getting measures from Congress and from OMB and others, and it just adds up, and it creates just a tidal wave of work. You know, the government's hiring more people into these kind of roles. They're assigning more people to this kind of work. But what is the value there? And that's a serious question. You know, best practices, one of the best practices that I've seen is better target setting. And let me give you an example from that. What some of the more innovative state and local governments have been doing, and they have very tight budgets, is they say, look, 100% targets are not necessary. Customer satisfaction, taxpayer satisfaction is very high once we reach 85% of our target on garbage pickup or whatever it is. And getting that remaining 15% to 100 is a tremendous amount of money for no real big payoff. So let's look at targets more carefully, figure out where we really do need to get to 100% and maybe where we don't need to get to 100%. So let's start thinking more reasonably and, yes, more scientifically about target setting and where we should measure and what they should be.
All right, let's break on that note, and when we come back, we'll talk about whether the outcomes that some agencies are setting are reasonable or whether we're going too much for the 100% solution. We'll do that when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My in-depth conversation on agency performance measurement with John Desenberg, John Kamensky, and Robert Shea. We'll be back in a moment.
Today's Emergency Preparedness Series is brought to you by the D.C. Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency.
72 hours. If a major disaster hits, that's how long it might take for critical services to be restored. Everyone should be prepared for at least 3 days without electricity, water, or communication. In addition to making a plan and storing supplies, talk with your neighbors. Make sure they have a plan, and be sure to look out for those neighbors who might need a little extra help, like senior citizens living alone. I'm Mark Seagraves.
The first day of school for D.C. public school students is August 23rd. Parents and guardians, make sure your children's immunization records are up to date. The Center for Disease Control recommends influenza vaccination as the first and most important step in protecting against the flu. As flu season begins, remember that in addition to vaccination, the best way to prevent the spread of contagious diseases like H1N1 is to cover your cough, wash your hands, and stay home if you're sick. For information on school immunization requirements and H1N1, call 311 or doh.dc.gov.
Hi, this is Jim Fleisig. Please join me on Tuesday, August 10th at 12 noon for my monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. Our program this month will focus on critical issues facing government and industry in cybersecurity. The panel includes government leaders from DHS, Navy, and the NRC. Don't miss The Federal Executive Forum, Tuesday, August 10th at noon, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Sponsored by SafeNet, McAfee, and HP Enterprise Services.
Which agency has the best food or cafeteria? Who has the best gym? What about the agency with the best overall location, the best parking or transportation options? Who's the best dressed fed you know? Federal News Radio is having some fun this summer with our Best of the Federal Government feature. Throughout the summer, we'll ask you to vote for your favorites. Voting begins Monday, July 26th. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for Best Of. That's federalnewsradio.com. Keyword, Best Of.
Back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My in-depth conversation today on setting performance metrics at agencies with Robert Shea, John Kamensky, and John Desenberg. And we were talking before the break about the John Desenberg making the point that there are some state and local agencies that are finding that maybe 100% solution is not cost effective or worth pursuing just because of the nature of the work that's involved or the service that's involved. But John Kamensky, you made a pretty good point during the break about some areas where maybe that's not a standard that we should let slip.
Well, I'm okay with 85% customer satisfaction with trash pickup. I'm mm-hmm. not okay with 85% of flights landing safely. I would like that to be as close to 100%, if not 100+1%, if at all possible. And same with things like food safety or astronauts going up in space. You don't want to have an error margin in some cases. And the cost of that is oftentimes quite high, but we as a society are willing to live with it.
Mm-hmm. I think what both these guys are saying is there ought to be a rational basis for the setting of targets. You generally want your performance to improve year to year, but sometimes improving your performance can be cost prohibitive. And if it's not a critical service to get that extra percentage improvement, then it may not be worth it. You ought to move your resources somewhere else.
But I hear a discussion coming around what's critical and what's not that's going to sound the same and look the same as the inherently governmental conversation. That everybody that has a stake in it's going to have a completely different view of what's a critical service, what should be 100% and what shouldn't be. Am I wrong about that?
Oftentimes when it comes to human life, I think there's an easier standard setting.
Fair enough, but I don't think
it's that big of a deal whether it's performed purely by the government or by a mix of government and private sector, as with air traffic control. Mm-hmm. There are some areas irrespective of who's performing the function, where you want performance to be perfect.
Yeah. But I imagine there are, if we really made a list of all of them, there are going to be some. Obviously, human life is one that we want to keep at 100%. But there are going to be some, as we get further down the list, that different people place different levels of priority on, and different people find that they think that it's important for that performance to be absolutely perfect. Am I wrong?
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, on a snow day when they say only essential employees show up.
Right.
You should stand there with a clipboard, and maybe we could set targets based on who has to show up that day. I mean, I'm kidding.
Right. But, well, you know, this gets to a good point, which is this topic about, you know, we need to be 100%, it often, unfortunately, leads to a lack of risk-taking and a lack of innovation because people feel like, I can't make a mistake. I can't make a mistake. I have to spend tremendous amounts of money in order to ensure, you know, zero errors. We would do much better, I think, if we started to understand that performance management also equates to pilot projects, innovation, and measuring innovation, and then spreading pilot projects to other parts of government. I just don't want the talk of an error-free government to get in the way of thinking outside the box, thinking more creatively. And unfortunately, I think that tends to happen.
How much of performance management, especially at the beginning when we're trying to figure out what it is that we want to measure in the first place, how much of it is held up by the fact that people in government generally are afraid to fail, or I shouldn't say afraid, unwilling to fail?
I think it's a lot. I think people are afraid of who will criticize them for poor performance, failure to do something. I also think they feel like there's some phantom out there who's imposing requirements that if you fail to comply with, something disastrous will happen. John spoke a little bit earlier about this layering of requirements that have occurred over time, and I often hear from clients that they must measure something because OMB told them to,
mm-hmm.
or they've got to produce a report because it's in the law. Well, to a large degree, agency leadership control their own destinies, and they should figure out what a rational, practical performance management framework is and adopt that in collaboration with these stakeholders like OMB, the Congress, and I think they'll find a ready audience willing to find out what's really useful in these organizations.
All right, Robert Shea of Grant Thornton, one of my guests on In Depth with Francis Rose, John Kaminsky, the IBM Center for the Business of Government, and John Desenberg of the Performance Institute here as well for our conversation about agency performance and how to measure it on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Back to wrap up hour number one of the program in just a few moments on In Depth with Francis Rose.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arink.
The reporter whose article in Rolling Stone magazine essentially destroyed General Stanley McChrystal's career is upset with the Defense Department because they've denied him permission to accompany troops in Afghanistan, saying he's not trustworthy. Kevin Barron writes in Stars and Stripes that Michael Hastings says that Colonel Wayne Shank, spokesman for the International Security Assistance Force in Kabul, told him his request to embed with a unit in Afghanistan is being denied due to political fallout. I'm J.J. Green.
When you're flying somewhere, you ever think about the amount of information that is needed to get you to your destination? Arink does every day. Arink enables airlines to send and receive vitally important operational information. So the next time you hear the flight crew advise that you'll be landing in 20 minutes, you're 30 miles from the airport. You'll be arriving at gate B26, and the weather is fine. Remember, this information travels to you over one of the world's largest private networks, Arink's. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
There's no better way to study the world's best golf swings than to watch them side by side on the range. Move down the line from Arnold Palmer to Fred Couples to Phil Mickelson, and you notice not just the differences, but the similarities, like their wonderful balance, rhythm, and timing. And if you look closely as they leave, you'll notice something else they have in common, the same timepiece, a Rolex day-date. Available in 18-karat white or yellow gold or platinum, the Day-Date is put through 15 days and nights of the most grueling testing before it ever leaves Geneva. That ensures that, like these great golfers, it will perform as well in the real world as it does in practice. To see a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Attention AFGE members, government, and military employees. Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to get items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. Purchase any laptop from July 15th through August 15th and receive a free custom skin. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
AFGE members are eligible for a 6% members only discount.
We're back to wrap up on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests for the in-depth conversation on measuring agency performance, setting the metrics, are John Kamensky of the IBM Center for the Business of Government, Robert Shea of Grant Thornton, and John Desenberg of the Performance Institute. As we start to run out of time, I'll start all the way to my right with John Kamensky, and we'll just go across. What have we not talked about when it comes to setting metrics that you want people to understand, John?
Well, I think that this administration is doing something that people in the performance field would see as radical, and that is that they are pushing transparency, and their data.gov, recovery.gov, spending.gov, all these things, and Robert was a pioneer in the USA spending.gov, is getting raw data out there and letting citizens and advocacy groups and nonprofits analyze it, as opposed to having it filtered and packaged for them by government employees. Mm-hmm. And so this whole notion of turning your thinking or your the source of data over to others to be able to do some thinking and setting priorities and setting performance information is going to be, I think, radical as it rolls out.
Do you think
agencies.
That's a good idea or a bad idea?
It depends on whether you're a government employee or not. I think if government employees are going to find that other people are taking their data, mm-hmm. analyzing it, and then telling them things that they didn't know about their own data. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's because they haven't had time to analyze it, or they may analyze it from a different perspective and using a different professional discipline than you would have. And that is very, I think, disconcerting. But this means that you don't have to have annual performance reports. They could be live performance reports, mm-hmm. with data that are current. So this is going to change the dynamic, I think, of the whole performance field in the next few years.
Robert, what haven't we touched on?
I think I agree with John that the transparency is a big step, and I think it's generally going to be positive, though I found in our efforts that very few people really made use of the information. The analysis of it was pretty weak. The administration has also tried to drive very senior-level focus on the most important performance improvement efforts, which I think is really a very positive step. What I think folks miss is some of the structure, believe it or not, from the Presence Management Agenda scorecards and the Program Assessment Rating Tool.
You're not prejudiced at all, are you?
I'm totally biased. But I find folks telling me that the performance management professionals who want to leverage these kind of initiatives to improve performance in the agency miss these requirements, miss this structure around which to measure, improve, and manage performance.
Is there a risk that by having all the data out there, as John Kamensky said, that people might tense up because they think they potentially could always be under scrutiny? Somebody's always watching them?
John created that problem when he enacted the Government Performance and Results Act. So we are far beyond that problem.
Horses out of the barn.
That's right.
John Desenberg, what haven't we touched on that people should be thinking about?
We really have to talk about both sides of Pennsylvania Avenue here, not just one side. But let me talk about both sides real quickly and add on to what Robert mentioned. When I go into agencies and talk, most of the leadership they are not aware of the administration's philosophy on measures. They are not aware of what the administration is looking for from measures. So while the administration may have a framework in their back pocket or something they're secretly working on, no one knows about it, and so people are left to drift to their own devices. And I understand part of this. They did not want to add yet another framework. They did not want to be responsible for yet another reporting burden. But not doing anything is in many ways like doing something. And it for an administration that prides itself on messaging and getting its message out,
they
have not done a particularly good job in this area getting their message out. And turning to Congress really quickly, the number one thing I think all of us hear is, when's Congress going to get behind this? When is Congress going to start using the measures to help make better decisions and help us with our budget in a more rational, more sensible way? And when a new Congress comes in this fall, if they are bent on cutting government programs, will they be able to use good data to make better decisions in that regard? And I think right now the answer is no. Congress still does not seem to be using performance data very well. Maybe this is a discussion for another day, but wanted to let everyone know that Congress, the House anyway, did pass performance legislation, Congressman Cuellar, and I'd urge everyone to take a look at that, and that's a small step forward. Mm-hmm. And of course, Senator Warner is also working on something. So we've got to get both sides of Pennsylvania Avenue involved.
I want to get all of you on the record here while I have a chance to put you on the spot and ask you all to come back, because I think you're right, John. I think the new Congress has the potential to really change the way that performance is done at agencies, even within the Obama administration. So I'd like to get you all to come back once the new Congress is in place and see where we all stand with that.
Well, thank you.
Gentlemen, a terrific conversation, even greater than I expected, and I appreciate all of your time to be with me today. Robert Shea of Grant Thornton, John Desenberg of the Performance Institute, John Kaminsky of the IBM Center for the Business of Government, thank you all very much for being on the program today.
Thank you, Francis.
Hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose is right around the corner on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, when we continue. Cloud computing at your agency. Still a lot of money to be saved. Still security concerns to be addressed. And Dr. Darrell West of the Brookings Institution looking at those at an event at his organization about 2 weeks ago. You'll hear some highlights of that event. And then we'll talk to Dr. West later on in hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.